mentioned earlier that when I started getting interested in service from a Dharma point of view, I looked around and there wasn't a lot out there. There's some organizations like the Buddhist Peace Fellowship that have been around for decades. But it's, at least in this country, it's pretty sparse. The organizations that are there, they're starting to be more. And I, as Lori was saying, I'm involved in a couple of them. Kind of traditionally, in Asia, where Buddhism developed, the model is the monastery is kind of like the social hub, or not, maybe that's not the right word, the spiritual hub. And a lot of services are provided through the monasteries, and that's still true to this day, that you'll find orphanages, schools associated with monasteries, sometimes food distribution and different things like that. But this is just some examples of some organizations I've been involved with, or ones that are Sangha. I think we start with the Sacramento Insight Meditation, which is the group I'm involved in Sacramento. They've been around for about 9 years. It's a group, and they went on pilgrimage in 2007 to the Buddhist sites in India, and they encountered this woman. There's a slide of her in the next shot, Sister Mary Lobo, who's kind of like a Mother Teresa figure. And it turns out, I mean, Mother Teresa's, you know, incredible woman, but it turns out in the work I've done in overseas, I've encountered a lot of people with that same spirit, you know, that kind of selfless giving and very dedicated and, you know, good scruples and, you know, have a good head on their shoulders. As far as I can tell, and that's really heartening. And this is one of them. So they encountered this woman, and she's a Catholic nun who's Indian born. I don't know the exact order. I'm not Catholic, but it's an order that comes through Portugal and has been in India for a long time. It's not the same as the Sisters of Charity. But she has taken on, as her service, the Dalit class. You know, there's a caste system in India, and she works with this group of the untouchables, and has a number of programs. And so, our sangha was very inspired by this meeting with this woman. She's not in this slide; she's in the next slide. But these are people in the project. So they have a microloan project, and they have a number of educational and vocational training programs specifically for women and children and girls to help them, get some resources, some advantage in a very disadvantaged existence system. And so what the woman in the middle there in the white, is Mary, Sister Mary Lobo, and these are some people from our sangha. The man on the right is Dennis Warren, who started Sacramento Insight Meditation. And then the woman next to Sister Mary is Christy Tews, who's a long-term Dharma practitioner, and she has a sangha up outside of Reno. And she is a kind of like a Buddhist tour guide operator. She, I went with her and John Travis on the same pilgrimage in 2005, and then I went with her and John Travis, and that's in India and Nepal, this Buddhist pilgrimage site, and then I went with her in 2008 with John Travis to Mount Kailash in Tibet. And so she does all of the logistics, and, you know, just a really wonderful woman. And then these are members of our sangha in the background. The board of Sacramento Insight Meditation, it makes a decision that they give a certain amount of money each year to the group. I think it's $1,000 or $2,000 that they give to Sister Mary Lobo's group. And then another project that our sangha does kind of collectively is they provide a meal at this women and children's shelter in Sacramento called St. John's. And so they'll have one day of the month that's for our Sangha, and they'll, you know, someone will go out and do the shopping, and then they have a kitchen there, so they'll cook it, and then they'll serve it to the women and families. And this is just a picture in the kitchen of them. I think they were making a meatloaf that day, and they have the nice aprons. So it's a whole thing. It's really rewarding for people to do that. This is another group, Buddhist service group, that started from a member in our Sangha, Diane Wild, who has been interested and been involved in bringing Dharma into the prisons for a while, and they have just become organized. I'm on the board of that group as well, and basically there's volunteers that go out each week to have a sitting group. They give a little bit of teaching, but you know, a lot of it is, you know, supporting the men in their Dharma practices, because it is a minority religion, and there's been a lot of history of discrimination against Buddhist practice in the prisons. But there's more and more prisoners who are taking on Buddhism either as part of their primary religion. There's more and more people from Southeast Asia, like Vietnamese young men and some women, that are incarcerated. And then there's also people, you know, like us, who figure we'll give it a try. You know, other things haven't worked. I'm speaking for myself. I don't want to be speaking for you. And maybe I'm speaking for the men in prison who are giving it a try. So they go out, volunteers go out each week and provide the service. And there's a lot of obstacles. You know, they have to have clearance, and sometimes there's lockdowns, and you never know until you get there. And it's and then when you get there, it's probably safe, but you sign a waiver that says if there's a hostage situation, you know, they aren't going to negotiate. And you know, it's a challenge. And then, you know, of course, sometimes what comes up in the group, you know, and the men are very respectful, I'm told. They are very serious. Some of them are very serious practitioners, and then there's some looky-loos. You know, it's kind of like any sangha. Here's just a picture of them doing their meditation. This is the main chapel at Old Folsom. So they go to Old Folsom and New Folsom Prison. Those are both prisons outside of Sacramento, in Folsom, the town of Folsom. And then there's Mule Creek. They're starting to go in there too. Kind of interesting, under that picture in the chapel of the last songs. Yeah. Apparently that picture was painted in the 30s, and it's got all of the disciples are faces of inmates of that time, lifers. There's been some, I guess it's getting kind of old and miscolored, so there's some interest in restoring it. It's a real historical.
Even the face of Jesus was some.
I don't know if that's probably a Jesus face, but because that would create a little bit of a problem, you know, if you had one prisoner be Jesus.
I had a question about that. Was it politically difficult to get a Buddhist group into that prison?
Yes. Yeah, it is. Well, you know, there's a lot of subtle discrimination. You know, basically, in order for this group to go in there, they need approval by the prisons, prison administration, of course. And then they need to have, like, a sponsor. So someone, and, you know, typically in the evening, although sometimes they're doing it in the afternoon, someone who, you know, is like in the administration, who's willing to escort that group in. In some situations, there are people who have been doing this for a while, they get a brown card, which allows them to go in without an escort. But depending on the prisons, they need an escort. And if that person's not available or they don't want to do it, they have to find another person out. And the most important person for this group going in is the chaplain. There's a chaplain at each prison, or, you know, sometimes several, and they're paid by the prisons to be, you know, full-time. Typically Christian, although at Mule Creek it's a Muslim chaplain.
Well, what I have in the back of my mind is it difficult because it's Buddhist and not Christian to get into the prison.
Yeah, we think so. I mean, that would never come out, you know, as cogently as you put it. I mean, the administration would never admit to that. They have said things like, well, it's a marginal group. But, you know, California being added as it is, and prisoners, you know, who some of them are studying law and, you know, finding out how to fight the system from within, there's a big change now. And there's actually someone, Diane and a group of people have met with one of the higher-ups in the prison to see about actually doing retreats. This group has done some day-longs, and it's, you know, the men just loved it, and it was, you know, but they really had to jump through a lot of hoops. And there's this whole model, some of you may have seen that movie, doing Dharma Brothers, or doing time doing Vipassana, where the Goenka Vipassana groups go in and they do a 10-day retreat in prisons. This started in India, and now they're doing it in the South. And so the Goenka people were at this meeting wanting to do their 10-day retreats. Jacques Verdun, who has started Insight Prison Project at San Quentin, it's kind of the oldest Buddhist group, as far as I know, in California. He's really on a campaign now. I think he just resigned at that post, and he's really trying to get involved with bringing this message out and really increasing the Buddhist services at prisons. And
yeah, he has a meeting, I think, this month with the prison though.
Yeah, that was last Tuesday. That was
okay,
the same way. He
right.
was there, and you know, yeah. It was like a big...
Right.
big
He's trying to get approval to bring insight meditation into the prisons in all of California.
Hmm.
And he's actually scheduled to come out here to
great.
Talk about that project.
Here, you meaning?
Modesto.
Really?
Yeah, he'll be coming. I don't know. We have to wait until... to see what happens with this meeting that he had.
Mm-hmm. Diane said it went really well. They were told that someone very high up in the administration, the governor's administration,
Jerry.
Well, that's what everyone speculated, but who knows? Really wants to have meditation in the prisons and wants to support it. And you know, maybe it's kind of embarrassing for progressive California to not have that at the same level as some of these southern prisons, you know, who are doing these 10-day retreats.
Yeah.
You know, the Dharma Brothers.
Yeah, true.
But I think he's either coming out in May or early June.
Hmm. Huh. Okay.
So this is another group, and this is called the Myanmar Schools Project, and it was started by Steve Armstrong, who's one of the teachers in Spirit Rock and IMS, Insight Meditation Society. And he and his wife Kamala live in Maui. And they... this looks like trouble. started this a number of years ago. And, you know, probably many of you know that Burma is probably the poorest country in Southeast Asia. It has one of the richest resources, but it's controlled by this crazy oligarchy, military oligarchy, and people are very suppressed. And, you know, the Buddhist, there was an uprising amongst the monks and nuns I think a couple of years ago now, and it was, you know, pretty much squelched. And so a lot of this tradition comes through Burma. You know, it started in India with the Buddha, and then through Sri Lanka, this I'm talking about, you know, Vipassana or Theravada Buddhism, and then to Burma and Thailand. And a lot of our teachers and the people who introduced it to this country, like Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein and Sharon Salzberg, trained for many years in Burma and Thailand. So it's really, you know, me and Steve Armstrong was a monk with Sayadaw Pandita, I think, for like 5 years in the 80s when he was a young man. So he goes back frequently and saw all of this, you know, suffering and all this need, you know, really a lot of poverty. And so he started this project where all they do is they collect money and distribute it. So he will go there each year, and, you know, people make donations. They have a website, and you can make a tax-deductible donation. And they'll carry in, you know, a briefcase of $100,000 and give it out in, you know, either 1,000 or, you know, 5 or 10,000 with to various schools project, but with the kind of guidance and the wisdom of several people they have on the ground, both monastic and lay people who they know, they've known for many years and trust, and they know, you know, where the money's going and how to get the most stretched out of it. This is one of their school's projects. They, you know, of course, whenever they come, they have a big ceremony. The kids are out. And there's Steve on the right with his business partner in the nonprofit, you know. And so they do a lot of, you know, really careful reflection on how can they be of the most help and of minimal harm. Steve comes to Sacramento once a year and meets with us. He gives a day long, and he also meets with the various leaders in our Sacramento Insight Meditation Group, and always updates us on his organization. So they build schools, they provide uniforms, sometimes meals, sometimes repair projects, and it's just a, you know, it's a small grassroots organization that's doing this kind of work. And then this is, you know, we're talking about everyday acts of kindness. There were a couple of our members of our group who recently went with Joseph Goldstein to Burma. There was a pilgrimage that he was guiding, and they were in Cambodia for a while, and they, you know, they went to, some of you have been to Siem Reap, which is the gateway to Angkor Wat. These are the famous ruins, and it's incredible the, I was there a number of years ago, it's incredible the amazing wealth that's gathered, you know, in this tourist destination, and then just outside of town is just abject poverty, you know, and, you know, people who get by on just a, you know, a couple dollars a day. And so they saw this, and of course everyone's hitting you up for, you know, a dollar or, you know, whatever. And they thought, well, you know, what's the most skillful way to be of service in this, to be generous in this situation? So they bought, I think it was like, what was it, 200, some large number of uniforms, school uniforms, and then went to some of these schools, and they had a local person kind of helping them, and they just, you know, they handed the uniforms out, because it's really, you know, for those of you who have been to Asia, you know that we don't have this culture so much here, but to go to school is, you know, quite a privilege, and to have a uniform that signifies that is really, you know, a very important, you know, very symbolic experience. And, you know, a lot of these kids don't, would never be able to afford the uniforms. I think they're like $5 a piece, you know, which is, you know, to a way out of their means. So they just bought these uniforms and distributed, and now they're going to go back with doing some more of that kind of work next year. Then this is probably the biggest relief agency, Buddhist relief agency, and you know, this is in the milieu of these organizations like you know, wonderful organizations like what is it, Save the Children, and or but I'm trying to think of some of them. The
Kepler International.
Not so much that, but anyways, there's these large, primarily Christian relief organizations that provide. That some of them have budgets of, you know, onwards of billions of dollars.
Oxfam's
one, yeah, and World Vision is a big one. There's quite a few out there. It's slipping my mind. It's interesting, this is just an aside, that the largest provider of humanitarian aid worldwide is the U.S. government. USAID is the branch, I don't know where it falls under, and that provides, I think, $2 or $3 billion worldwide, and then the second is a close tie between the European Union, has a similar umbrella organization to distribute aid, and then the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is also a huge global player in that. You know, the that always warms my heart that, you know, this kind of capitalist who, you know, probably did some somewhat treacherous, you know, business transactions in his days, you know, in his, as he got older, realized, you know, well, what am I going to do with this vast amount of wealth? And both he and Melinda and also Warren Buffett, who was, I think, like the third richest man in America and the world, decided to put a significant amount of their money into this foundation to mainly tackle, and it's not a Buddhist organization, so I hope I'm not misleading you, but it's just an interesting story that's, you know, significant for me to have that kind of change of heart that puts money into education. They're really big in Africa, which is the most desperately needed area in this world in terms of medications and treatments, health treatments, malaria, HIV, things like mosquito net programs, and then they also have some educational programs in this country as well. So they have a very large budget and do a lot of good work. So that's kind of the, and then comes these other non-profit, non-governmental organizations. Yes.
Talking about Warren Buffett, he was recently in India for the first time. He got 100 of the richest Indians together and to talk to them about giving. But interestingly, he didn't say give money. He said you need to find out what are the needs in your country. And that was great. And he starts saying, you know, give money. So now they have set up an institution of, you know, finding out where the needs are and all that. And they're going to use the Bill and Melinda Gates model to do that. So that's
great.
Very good.
Yeah, that country, like ours, has amazing discrepancies between wealth.
Where is UNICEF?
UNICEF, well, that's part of the UN. That's the United Nations Children's Educational Foundation. And so the UN has this, you know, it's kind of like this umbrella where it has political things, but it has a lot of humanitarian aid. It has, I think, the WHO, the World Health Organization, is under that rubric also. So they're a very big player. UNICEF is huge.
Not so big.
So what happened, how this got started, Buddhist Global Relief, was Bhikkhu Bodhi, who's one of my teachers, and I think a number of you know him. He's an American monk who has been quite a prolific translator of the Pali canon of the suttas into English. He lived for many years in Sri Lanka and was head of the Buddhist Publication Society, and then has been living back in this country for about 10 years. And is very, very compassionate and very wise a man, and is somebody who I've gotten to know personally is able to. Some monastics are a little aloof, and you know, I mean, there's this whole kind of long history between monastics and lay people like we are. But he's a very personable person, and he doesn't see himself as less than or more than. He's humble yet, you know, very. Has a lot of integrity, and he writes a lot of different articles that come out in various Buddhist publications. And in, I think it was 2008, he wrote an article in Buddha Dharma, one of the journals, that said basically we can't just have metta practice and compassion practice be these internal meditative states that we do, you know, which is kind of the historical teaching, that they need to be, we need to translate this to a world that's in crisis, that's in suffering. And it's really, if you get a chance, it's on the Buddhist Global Relief website. It's a very heartening article. I read it at the time and was quite moved by it. And then some of his closest students said, well, okay, now let's do this. Let's start something that can do that. So they started this organization. It's a nonprofit. And what they do is they just do food aid, and you know, they're very intelligent. I've gone to their meetings, and I'm one of the volunteers. They collect donations, and then they find other small NGOs on the ground and provide them grants. So, for example, there's a hospital in Vietnam that has 500 beds. It's a very large, you know, hospital by Western standards. And the way medicine works in a lot of countries and in Vietnam is you go there, and usually the treatment's for free, but you've got to pay for your medicine and you've got to provide your own food. So it gets really kind of complicated. And so for one of their grants is, I think it's like $1,000, which isn't much, they provide one meal a day of vegetables, tofu, and rice to each patient of these 500 beds in that hospital every day of the year. So really stretches it a long way. And you know, so they look for very, you know, these big bang for the buck kind of projects. There's projects in Cambodia, Sri Lanka, India. I think they have one now in Pakistan. There's two in Africa. They went to Haiti after the earthquake last year. And then there's a U.S. Food program also. And it's a small organization. Their budget, their first year was just about $100,000. And this year they're well over that at this point. But it's, Bhikkhu Bodhi is the chairman of the board. So, and there's a lot of other, they have a board of advisors, one of whom is Gil Fronsdale. I think Sharon Salzberg's on as one of their advisors as well. And so they really are looking at intelligent ways to be of help and to not harm. And this is an example of a food distribution place in Africa. This is in Cambodia. It's common for impoverished families, or common enough, that sometimes the girls will leave the village and go to the cities, and boys too, to make a living, and there's not a lot of jobs sometimes, so they'll end up in the sex trade industry. So in their grants in places like that, and this one in Cambodia, they link the food aid, you know, it's kind of conditional, to education. So for example, they will provide a bag of rice for a family, and they're part of the Lotus Outreach International is the name of the local group that they interface through. They'll make that bag of rice condition that the children will stay in school, you know, because now they don't have to work, you know, they've got that subsidy. So they try and combine education of children, especially girls, with food aid. And this is the U.S. Kind of a planting and harvesting program. Yeah. And then a little over a year ago, Gil Fronsdale and kind of challenged me and another Sangha member to start a group that will do humanitarian aid. They'll be associated with Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, and that will, will do initially medical missions abroad. We're also looking at some local projects in the Bay Area. With the thought of how can we do service in a meditative way, you know, with insight meditation. So he's been kind of the spiritual guide of this, and Nancy Smee, who's a professor of nursing at UCSF, and me have been kind of the organizers, and the three of us are on the board, and we've applied for our nonprofits. We've organized as a corporation. We've applied for our nonprofit status. We have a website, newsletters and all this kind of stuff. So we're really starting to gain momentum. And I'll talk about this in a minute. I went to Cambodia a couple months ago to do some scouting. We have a number of contacts there. One person is Beth Goldring. Did Beth come here?
Yes.
Yeah. So Beth Goldring is a Zen priest. I guess.
Nun
priest, a Zen practitioner. She also a Vipassana practitioner who has been living in Cambodia for 16 years. Wonderful woman. I don't know if any of you had a chance to meet her, but she's just a delight. And she has really been our person on the ground over there. She started a nonprofit called the Brahma Vihara Cambodia AIDS Project. So initially it was a hospice project that she started for people who had AIDS. When the AIDS epidemic hit Cambodia, it looked like it was just going to be, you know, utter devastation, as some places in Africa where, you know, sometimes half the village will die from HIV. But what's happened in Cambodia, so initially they were hospice, but what's happened there is through a number of NGOs and the government, and I think primarily maybe WHO, I got to check that, you can now get treatment if you have HIV. You know, there's a big testing campaign. If you get tested, you can get free meds or very cheap meds, you know, which was always prohibited. But this kind of activity is happening throughout the world, and it's really changed the face of face of AIDS, maybe too late for some places, you know, like in Africa. But so she's gone from being a hospice organization to kind of a service organization of providing, you know, food and support for people with HIV in Cambodia. And of course, you know, there's always more need than she can provide. But she has a staff, and she, you know, she kind of organizes this, and they take donations. And so she was our contact person, and we have a number of other people that she's put us in touch with. So I went to Cambodia in Southeast Asia. It's like right below Thailand. I don't know if you can see it there. I don't know if this is going to work. Well, anyways, it's in there.
Yeah.
And this is Angkor Wat I was talking about earlier. You know, this is incredible ruins in Phnom Penh. And I was part of a medical volunteer group, a week-long group. This is the fourth time I've done that. I've done it mainly with... This is the first time I've done it in Asia. Previously, it's been with Christian organizations in Latin America. And kind of where my involvement in this started is I had a student interview with Gil one day, and I was telling him about my latest trip to Latin America, and he said, well, we should do that. And I said, well, who's the we? And he said, us, you know, the Sangha. And I said, well, you know, that would really warm my heart, because there's no Buddhists doing this kind of work. There, I think Adrian... what's her name? Adrian Ross. She's a
Adrian Ross.
She's
a doctor.
She's a doctor, and she's done some work like this in Tibet. But there's no organization. I think she just kind of made some arrangements, and there's no ongoing effort. So that's kind of how my involvement got. And this is not Insight World Aid. This is another group called Peaceworks Medical. It's a non-denominational group that goes to Honduras, Haiti, Cambodia each year, and they'll have a site that they'll go to. This is their Cambodia site, and I was a member of the team. This is the group, and you can see at the top of the stairs there's two monks there in their orange and red robes. So this is at a monastery, and the people in blue in the middle, those were the Americans who came over with their, you know, various skills, medical skills, and then this whole sea of translators, because none of us speak Khmer. Mm-hmm. And Cambodia, I think many of you know, is a country that's really suffered greatly. There was years of civil war and strife. They got sucked into the Vietnam War and were bombed and had all sorts of political machinations take place. And then the Khmer Rouge took over in 1975 and created, you know, basically a genocide and destroyed all of their intellectual infrastructure of their civilization and made it a agrarian technologyless civilization. I don't know what they were thinking, because they had years of hostile interactions with their neighbors, Vietnam and Thailand, and you know, if you stop having factories to make bombs and weapons, you're not going to last long. And luckily they didn't, but they did last for about 4 years, and about 2 million Cambodians were killed. And then the Vietnamese came in, and years of civil war were launched. I was really disheartened to learn that the U.S. government funded the Khmer Rouge for many years in the civil war, because, you know, they were against Vietnam. But be that as may, there's a big tribunal going on now in Cambodia to try and bring to justice Pol Pot, who was the you know, the master architect of their of that genocide, died a number of years ago, was never brought to justice, and there's some of the other higher ups that are on trial. But they're, you know, there's these complicated, you know, international humanitarian war crimes tribunals, so it's millions of dollars and lots of people who are trying to get some sort of relief. But so we went to Cambodia. I went there as part of this group, and they go to this village. It's a pagoda. You'll see a scene of it in a minute. And it's kind of the hub of a large, several villages. There's a school there, government-run school, an orphanage, There's a monastery there, and this is the third year that this group has come in, and they provide health screenings and medications for free. And I think we saw about 2,300 people. There were nine of us providers. We're there for a week. Gave out a lot of medications. And this is our sleeping quarters. So this is the upstairs. It's an open air meditation hall that has all of these scenes from the life of the Buddha painted on the ceilings and the walls. There's the altar in the back. And so we brought our tents and just set them up to sleep in them at night. The weather was very nice. And then we'd, get out of bed in the morning and go have breakfast and go to work downstairs in the main part of the meditation hall. And it was really lovely, on these, when I've been to Latin America, a lot of times there's a sense of danger. I've been to Peru and to Guatemala, and there you can't really go walking around in the village. There's especially Guatemala is fairly crime in the old days of civil war. Now it's drug crime and heady crime. You'd be mugged. But we walked around freely in the villages here, and we met people who were very grateful that were there. Everyone knew why we were there. It's probably the only Westerners that come to that particular area. This is about two hours south of the capital, Phnom Penh. So it was a very wonderful experience. And I was able to make a bunch of contacts and have things in motion to bring over this Insight World Aid Group in 2 years. I'm going to go back in January next year with this very small group just to do more scouting and more kind of make arrangements for the following year, and we'll bring people up. So there's a link to our website on the handout if you want more information about our group. And this was something I'm hoping Insight World Aid will get into. I brought it up to the board, and it's gotten a good response so far. But it seems to me that yes, there's a need in Cambodia and Africa and all these places, but there's also a lot of need here. So if we create this Insight World Aid, we're part of the world. And that, so I really think we need a local projects. And there certainly is, it's probably easier for people to volunteer locally than to, get on a plane to go overseas. So my hope is we'll do that. And this is one possibility. I was involved in this, it's called a medical expedition, but it's the same thing that we were doing in Cambodia and in Latin America, basically providing medical services for free, and they had dental and vision, and it's really amazing. It was started by this Remote Access Medical. They've been doing it for about 15 years. I'll show the founder in a minute. And then they hooked up with this Buddhist group called Tsuchi, which is from Taiwan, and they're probably the biggest Buddhist organization really, that does humanitarian. They do medical and other types of aid. And then the local sponsor was these oral maxillofacial surgeons. And basically they got this huge warehouse at the Cal Expo and set up, these are all dentist chairs for hygienists to clean teeth and dentists to pull or teeth or do fillings. Probably 20 to 30 volunteers at a time. Then in the little tents in the back where the medical people were, I was there. There was optometrist actually checking eyes and making glasses on the spot for people. It was really very.
This just happened last week, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they were 2 weeks ago, and then last week they were in Oakland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And this is the first time they've been able to do this in California. They started in the South, I think Tennessee. There's always issues about licensing and, coming in, and they need a sponsor and all of this. And, basically patients would come in, I would take a brief history of physical on them and then, listen to them. I think most of what I was doing was listening and just, these are... Most of these were people without insurance or working poor, what we call the working poor, who don't, or unemployed people, who, they have all of the their health issues, and they, you know, in this very affluent world country, and yet have no access, you know, to it. It's really painful to see, but I see it all the time, every day when I work at the ER. I mean, that's kind of the stopgap. You know, you don't have these all the time, so people will go to the ER, and, you know, they have to take you, but and then you get this bill from the hospital, and, you know, and if you can't pay the bill, then a collection agency, you know. So it's a really sad tale. And this was just the guy, Stan Brock, who started and ran remote area medical. He was a star on the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom in the 60s, a young guy, and he's dedicated his life to providing medical aid. This is just the cover of, from the website of Suchi. And then that's just from the website of Buddhist Peace Fellowship. The Buddhist Peace Fellowship had provided a number of service opportunities. A lot of theirs, they used to be involved in the prisons, they're not so much more. They have a lot of social action for change and other types of projects. And that's the slideshow. Are there any questions?
Yeah. I think you mentioned the first piece that you mentioned, the one in Sacramento. The very first group was involved with microloans.
Oh, yeah.
Is there an interest? What's your take on microloans as a way to be of service?
Well, I've sponsored various ones, including this one, over the years. I mean, I think it's a good model, you know. In fact, I'm trying to think. There's a man from Bangladesh who started this whole concept. Wasn't he awarded like the Nobel Peace Prize? Or he had some sort of, maybe not that, maybe not. Anyways, it's a model that people who are smarter than me have looked at and thinks it's a, you know, I mean, obviously there needs to be some care and caution. That seems to be an effective way to help people help themselves, you know, to. You know, you make a small loan. Sometimes it's like $100 per thousand.
I'm thinking of Kiva.
Yeah, I've sponsored people through Kiva, you know, and that's, you know, it's kind of nice because you get their story, and it's not like you're just writing off a check. You're actually helping someone, you know.
It's very nice because they have pictures and they have a description of the people and what they're doing, and you feel like you made some kind of contact with the person.
You get a report, yeah. And then, yeah, Kiva's, I think, one of the biggest we have here. There's also, what's it called? There's one with women and children, I think. I can't remember, but, yeah. So, and then we are supporting this, you know, we're just a small donor to this DELETE project. There's many others, you know, it's I don't think they have a website, but they have a number of people in this country that support that Indian DELETE project. Gail.
Yeah. So this organization that you're just starting to form with Gail Bronsdale, what was the name of it?
Insight World Aid.
Okay, Insight World Aid. And so the concept there is you'll have fundraising campaigns or whatever to help support this. Is that what you're going to be doing?
We don't know, you know, I mean, our vision is to start off with, you know, specific projects like, you know, a medical and humanitarian mission. And, you know, the way that usually works is that people pay their own way and they volunteer to go on these trips, and that the donations that will come into the organization will be for, like, medications or, you know, there's other, I'm hoping we'll do, when we were on this in Cambodia, one of our affiliate groups, they were building wells. They were doing, you know, non-medical humanitarian work. So I'm hoping we'll have a component of non-medical, you know, because that seems like esoteric. I mean, not all, you know, people involved in Insight Meditation Center are, you know, in the health professions. So I'm hoping that we'll have some areas like that. And the money we raise is going to go at least our vision is to go specifically to people, you know, who need the money and not, you know, like to pay our way, or there's no, you know, everyone's a volunteer, there's no salaries or anything like that.
But if we wanted to donate to that, how would we go about that?
We have a PayPal button on our website.
Very convenient.
Yeah. There's on the handout is our website, and it has, you can send a check in. We have a bank account. Even though we haven't gotten our IRS approval, it's 27 months retroactive, so you know we have some more specific information on that in terms of tax deductibility, and you know we're collecting donations. I've made some, you know.
So Insight Global Aid.
Insight World Aid. Yeah. IWA. Yeah, there's so many of these acronyms, it gets kind of hard to keep up.
I was just going to say that I think that must be wonderful for you to be experiencing giving back the way that you're giving back and volunteering and going different places. In lieu of the way you were feeling in the emergency room prior to coming into your practice fully. And I think that's wonderful. It's a wonderful gift to give oneself when you feel burnt out and infected.
Thank you. Yeah, that helps. I mean, it also the service helps. We have another piece on that, but really kind of helps me with my meditation practice and then my professional life. So it's a balance. Well, let's see. What are we... it's 2:20. We've been sitting for a while. I don't know. The next piece is we have a guided sitting meditation on compassion, and then after that, walking meditation. So I don't know if people would like to stand up before we do the guided sit.